When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Coming your way.
Very good. Very good stuff. I love you guys. Thank you.
All right, gents.
I wish feel better, I had mentioned.
Jade. Thank you.
I wish I had mentioned, like, part of the reason that it's such a good story is because everybody likes DeMar DeRozan.
Yeah. That's fair.
It's true.
I wish I had mentioned that. That's just like, he's one of the most popular people by every demographic of person in the league, you know?
Well, and everybody felt bad for being critical in the past, you know?
Yeah. I should have mentioned that, but oh well. Yeah.
Well, maybe I'll surprise you, Fred.
There you go. Jade's always got something up his sleeve.
Hey, listeners. I want to tell you about a new special limited series we have coming up here on the Athletic NBA Show feed. It is called Stargazing. It is hosted by The Athletic's fantastic Lakers reporter, Jovan Buha. Stargazing is a look at the lifestyle gurus and support systems around NBA superstars. Each episode will center on one professional that represents an aspect of NBA culture. It could be fashion, it could be entertainment, nightlife, fitness, social media, as well as hear from the NBA superstars that work with these professionals. Some upcoming guests include Vince the Barber, Ronnie 2K, Rich Fresh, and B-Dot. Episodes of Stargazing will be released every Sunday starting on December 19th and will run through the NBA All-Star Weekend in February. That's Stargazing with our guy, Jovan Buha, Sundays right here on the Athletic NBA Show feed.
Is this thing on? One, two, mic check, one, two. All right.
Man, this is our city. This is our city, man. We did it, man. It's unbelievable.
We've seen the story before.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show. Monday through on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Tampering Podcast, part of the Athletic NBA Show Network. This is Sam Amick, NBA national writer at The Athletic, here with the usual suspects, Anthony Slater out west, Fred Katz out east. Gentlemen, what is the word? What's going on?
Nothing. I'm in the middle of a very heavy road schedule, but I'm home very briefly. So
you are home. I see that Northern California sun coming in behind you.
Sacramento sun.
I'm shocked I can't see the 50 inches of snow that are up in the Tahoe Mountains that have been coming in the last couple of weeks. Mr. Katz, I think that looks very friendly and homey behind you as well. You on the home front?
I'm home. I'm just trying to figure out how many players the Knicks have. One second, they're down two point guards and two centers. The next second, somebody's coming out of protocols. Next 7 seconds, someone's going into it. So,
Fred, I'm just happy you're here. I'm going to be honest that you're mastering the art of like being gone just enough to kind of tug at my heartstrings and make me miss you. And then you come back and it's even more meaningful when we get the great Fred Katz on here.
I have a friend who always used to tell me that people miss the idea of me more than they actually miss me. And when I return within 5 minutes, they're like, why did I miss him?
Well, that's not going to be the case today, I guarantee you, if only because among the many things we're going to get into on the back end of today's show, Fred's got some very strong feelings and opinions and passion about DeMar DeRozan and the season he is having. I know, you know, we've been talking about it a lot this season. The Basketball Buds got into it on yesterday's show, but Fred's going to bring a new twist there. But before we talk Bulls, gentlemen, the main topic, the top topic, if you will, we got a bunch of star returns coming up. One in Slater's backyard with Klay Thompson. Finally, January 9th, looking like
right behind me. Yep.
Is he behind you? I lost your screen. Oh yes, in your backyard.
Exactly. You said backyard, so you know.
I see Klay's getting buckets and right behind you. Klay, January 9th, tentatively, I think, is what your reporting has kind of dictated that his return after 2 years would probably take place. Does that sound about right?
Yeah. You know, it's going to be a home game, which they've been very clear about really since the beginning. And he kind of confirmed the other day saying that, like, the home fans deserve to see it. And, you know, there was some thought of maybe, you know, tonight, basically, when I'm talking. But, especially after he did that scrimmage, which we can get
Miami
into.
Miami game. Yep.
Yeah. In Denver the other day when it was kind of an impromptu scrimmage that felt like his last step. So I think he could have played tonight. Really, I mean, physically, he could have played, you know, in December at times. But all signs are pointing to January 9th. Now, they're getting through this week. They're about to go on a two-game road trip. They're going to take Friday off, and then they're going to have a Saturday practice and the Sunday game, which everything is leaning towards. You probably won't hear official word until Friday, Saturday, would be my guess, like from the team, you know, some type of announcement. But yeah, I mean, go even look at ticket prices on StubHub right now. You know, it's like very different for tonight's game.
The secondary different market.
Yeah. It's like, whoa, people are fired up for this Cavaliers game.
I thought about that myself. So real quick, before we dive in even deeper on Clay, you know, I got to give the context that I do find so interesting. That's more league wide this season, which in a lot of ways has been frustrating to cover because yet again, COVID obviously is impacting things. And you feel like every other week we need to have a medical expert on the show to talk about the latest. That's not necessarily quote unquote fun, but this season does have a unique, potentially fun quality in that some of these star players who might come back, some of them like Clay and now Kyrie Irving. Now that one's obviously a whole lot more divisive as a topic, but basketball wise, Kyrie coming back to the Nets, you know, pretty soon as well is a major story, I think on Wednesday against the Pacers. But, and this is down the line, as you guys know, I mean, we got Jamal Murray in Denver putting IG posts up of himself doing windmill dunks and having Nuggets fans wondering if maybe the reporting that had been out there about like mid-February, late February might be possible for him. You got Kawhi Leonard still completely unclear with the Clippers. Point being, we might have like this back end, you know, star return kind of subplot that is going to add a pretty unique twist.
It juices up like a normally dry part of the NBA season, right? This like right. Middle of this. What's funny to me, you know, you mentioned the Kyrie one compared to the Clay one. We can get to Murray because I'd love to get your thoughts on that. Haven't been around the Nuggets. Kyrie can't play at home, right? It's this weird like debut him in Indianapolis and then like say bye until we see him in the next city. Whereas with Clay, it's like we refuse to debut him on the road because like the home fans have to see him first, where like they have this very road heavy schedule right now and they're just looking for this like pepper date to put him in. Like he could probably play in, you know, Dallas on Wednesday, but they're not gonna, you know, that's actually Dirk Nowitzki retirement night in Dallas, which I'll be at. But it's just that dichotomy is
it is wild. I mean, that schedule, and I have it in front of me, they go at Indy on Wednesday, and so let's say as expected,
you're talking Brooklyn right now, right? He's talking
Brooklyn. Yeah. That, you know, Shams had reported that it would be Wednesday. Then they go at Chicago, but not until, let's see, we're recording on the 3rd. So Chicago, Wednesday is the 5th, and a week later it would be the next road game that he could play in. Then they get interesting because they're on the road the 17th to the 23rd at Cleveland, Washington, San Antonio, and Minnesota in that stretch. All in all, I guess to cut to the chase, 18 of 25 on the road for the Nets coming up here. So he's going to be available a lot. The two games he can't play in, of course, at the Warriors on January 29th, at Toronto on March 1st.
I believe he can, if I don't have this wrong, I believe he can play in the Warriors game, even though home Warriors players can't play. Like Andrew Wiggins couldn't have.
Yeah. Okay. No,
which is crazy.
You're correct.
I mean, that's, you know, it's weird. Like, it's really weird that Kyrie can come in unvaccinated and play where Andrew Wiggins couldn't have. There was even, I remember talking preseason, like, well, they were playing the Clippers. The Warriors were in their home opener. It's like, well, he can't play for the Warriors, but technically if they traded him to the Clippers, he could play in that game. I don't know.
Right, right.
It's very weird. Well, it's the same thing in New York. It's very strange. It's the weirdest part of the
world. Not play in Knicks games, correct, Fred?
Correct, because it doesn't have to do with the team. It's the city. So he cannot play Knicks games. It's the same city that employs him.
Right. Right.
Where he is employed.
And they need him. I mean, you know, I'm going to honestly just kind of skip over the vaccination discussion. We've talked plenty in the past. You guys know how I feel about it, but they need him from a, you know, Kevin Durant. Okay, great. You know, he was out in front or at least on the short list of a lot of people's MVP discussions and individually that's great, but he was putting up massive minutes, you know, carrying the kind of load that, it's one thing if you're trying to secure a certain playoff spot late in the season, that load was pretty heavy to not having, you know, even been to the new year yet. And then they had guys dropping like flies. And so basketball wise, I get it. You know, but it's been a long time since we've seen him too.
Can we also on that note, can we just talk real quick about how the main reason the Nets said for why they changed their mind, I mean, they said initially they didn't want a part-time player, right? They weren't going to accept somebody who operated that way. And they said they had to bring him back because they had so many guys in protocols, so many guys hurt, and they just needed the extra people. They needed the extra players. I mean, that's totally not the case anymore. And almost all of those guys are out of protocols. Joe Harris is still hurt. That's basically it. I mean, they don't need Kyrie from a putting together a roster standpoint anymore. If they're bringing back Kyrie, it's because they want Kyrie Irving playing in half of their games.
And if that doesn't, to that point, Fred, if that doesn't tell you all you need to know about whether you call it player empowerment or just the player influence on today's league, Joe Tsai is it's been well chronicled, is an extremely kind of vocal advocate of the vaccination. Of, you know, when you get him off the court, somebody who believes greatly in, you know, kind of everybody needing to take it for the greater good, and said things right around the time that Kyrie made his choice that weren't really all that coded. They made it clear he was upset. This was his team, and he, you know, was wishing that Kyrie had gotten the vaccine. The fact that he clearly changed his tune and greenlighted this kind of return tells you quite a bit.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the Nets are going to say. Someone will ask somebody about them basically not operating in the initial way that they were talking, and then them bringing Kyrie back in a time when they had everybody out of protocols anyway. And I don't know how they're going to answer that question, but somebody should ask them that question. I'm sure somebody will, and I'm very curious to see how they're going to answer it.
It's sports. Like, they want to win. They feel like, you know.
That's the reason.
Yeah.
I'm just curious what the answer is going to be.
Well, you know,
that's not what they said initially.
It'll be some, like, you know, wraparound quote that, you know, whatever. To me, I've read some of KD's quotes lately, and even Harden. It's just like, they're kind of just like, he's great. We need him. I mean, like, to me, even if, like, the organization's line is something a bit more coded, to me, it's coming from the players, which, as Sam was saying, like, are directing this decision, right? This is Kevin Durant. Like, I kind of want my all-star point guard back, who I came to this franchise, like, I'm not going to say solely he's the reason that KD chose the Nets, but, like, right? We all know that was, like, the tandem that went there. Like, they just want to win.
Yeah, like, you wouldn't have me without this guy type of thing.
Yeah. They want to win, but my question about it is, like, they still need him in home games. Like, do they need him in home games to get, like, the third seed? No, but, like, they need him in a Milwaukee Bucks series to,
they,
like,
don't need him that. I mean, listen, and I'm going to continue teasing Fred. Fred, you better bring it on the DeRozan thing, man. I'm going to be teasing it all the way through, because
this is going to be such a letdown.
Fred, Chicago Bulls are atop the Eastern Conference by a game as we talk today, and so. But the Nets are right there. And so I would probably push back Slater on, I mean, it kind of depends how we define needing, you know what I mean? Like, they're fine when it comes to getting first home court in the first round. And the bigger question to me that is way, way, way premature is that idea that if, you know, like some of the guys have said on our podcast network, that Kyrie is not expected to ever get the vaccine, then my goodness, what do the playoffs look like? You know, especially, by the way, you know, this cuts into the whole Warriors thing. The guys yesterday mentioned it and I think acted as if he couldn't play against the Warriors. So I guess in the playoffs he could, but bottom line,
let's go Bucks. How about Bucks series, you know, East finals, let's say they get through and they have, we'll even give Bucks home court, which would actually, does that help the Nets? He plays game one, game two. Okay. It's 1-1 going back to Brooklyn. Okay. You don't have Kyrie 3-4. You don't have him 6. Like, you could still win that series. It's just, imagine if there's a game 6 at home where you're down 3-2 and he's just like, all right, guys, hopefully you get it back to 7 right in Milwaukee.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, look at what happened last year. They play the Bucks in the second round and it goes to 7. And if they have home court in that situation, like, Kyrie's missing game 7, even if it's just a random closeout game, like, you're in the first round, like, they just aren't able to close it out in a game 5.
How about if they get the Knicks? I mean, I'm not sure they're going to get the Knicks. I think Fred's probably dubious of that. But what if they got the Knicks in the first round?
Fred's going 1-2-3 Cancun. What are you talking about?
I hadn't even thought about that. I still think the Nets would beat the Knicks pretty handily without Kyrie. But I hadn't even thought. I mean, the Knicks, I guess, could conceivably get the 8th seed in the play-in tournament. Who the heck knows what's going to happen in a play-in tournament? So yeah, yeah. I guess that would be
Toronto.
Crazy.
You can't even get into the country. I don't think. I don't think they would even let him. So Toronto's a possible first round series. But like Fred said, they're probably winning that series. To me, the bigger question is like the whole rhythmic continuity question of like, just it's weird to just have this guy in and out. Like basically, like every time you're ending a road trip, he's spraining his ankle and missing the next X amount of games, and then you'll see him on the road. I don't know. It's weird.
Right. All right, let's pivot to your guy, Mr. Slater, because you wrote some fascinating stuff on Clay. I'll throw it to you like this. Like you also kind of teased, we'll get into Jamal Murray in a second. But when Denver was in San Francisco to play the Warriors, they obviously barely got that game off. At the time, listen, I was hearing plenty of stuff about the Nuggets essentially already knowing that they had a bit of a problem on the COVID front, but they were not testing. Like we all thought they were going to, and they were not the only team where this was happening post December 26th. It was kind of like the unofficial way from the league standpoint of allowing them to get home. But bottom line, they sneaked that win in and then they head off to Denver. Now, the least they could have done is to tell the Warriors, hold off until we get all our test results when we get home. Because when the Nuggets get home, they get enough positives combined with their injuries that they didn't have enough of a roster and they end up scrapping the game. The Warriors had already jumped on their plane and headed out to Denver. I actually had a completely separate story. I had an interview with Steph over the phone and talked to him, in the middle of that time. And you could kind of tell that, as a group, they weren't thrilled with the way it had all gone down. Yeah. And you wrote that they were upset. So there was a silver lining though, right? So tell us what of benefit, did come from that Denver trip as it relates to Klay Thompson.
Yeah, they spent 3 days in Denver. I spent 3 days in Denver with zero games. And it was bad weather. You're near New Year's. A lot of the Warriors' families are not coming on the trip, even though they normally would because of the COVID situation. They got a bunch of coaches in protocol. They've actually just got the coaches are supposed to come out. A bunch of their players have come out. But generally, my point is it's somewhat of like a lonely cold weather trip where I think their preference would have been like, hey, look, if we're not going to play the game and we're going to have to go to Denver later in the season, which now they're going to have to, don't make us go to Denver right now and sit there and wait. And even day of when it was coming out, like, yeah, a lot of these positive tests, the Nuggets had four questionable players for injuries, not protocol. And if they just said one of these guys could play, the game could have been played, but they waited until like 1, 2 PM to basically rule those guys out. So there was like even a waiting game in the day of where they're just sitting in their hotel. Like, are we playing a game tonight or not? You guys know how that goes. Like, you want to know the rest of your day's plan. They didn't find out until about 2-3 and they were told game is canceled. I know you've been in Denver for over 24 hours. You're not playing a game tonight. They decided then to practice in the empty arena where they would have played the game. It was like a 6:30 PM practice, kind of a rare NBA practice. And because Steph Curry, Andrew Wiggins, Andre Iguodala, all the high minute veterans, guys who would never on practice days do anything strenuous, right? We all know how NBA seasons go. Like, you play your games and then you basically, recuperate until the next game. But because they had mentally prepped to play a game, they were kind of ready to get it in a little bit. And they have this Klay Thompson situation where he has been able to scrimmage now for over a month, really is getting very close, as he is even saying. But he has not been able to play with Steph Curry. He has not been on the court with Steph Curry in a game setting in now over 2 years. He has never played with Andrew Wiggins, even though Andrew Wiggins has been on the roster for now 2 years. And they, because of this situation, they were actually able to do a full, 12-minute hard scrimmage with Klay Thompson around the first unit. And, there was a lot of impressions that came out of that were positive. We can get into Iguodala had a good quote on it. Steph did too. Steph said Klay shot 17 times in 12 minutes, but Klay Thompson's general quote, I think what matters most is he felt it was a milestone. Like, that was the moment where like he got through that scrimmage. He played pretty well. He was around the lineup he's going to be around. And he's like, that kind of felt like, okay, I'm ready. And that's what matters.
Slater, did you get to see any of this or no?
Only glimpses of it. There's been some online footage from like the Warriors in-house team. He then, had a lighter practice the next day in Denver where it opened up. I saw him kind of running some more, shell drill type stuff and some shooting routine. But then we talked to him about it. He talked in Denver for about 10 minutes or so.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So I remember when I was covering John Wall's rehab from the Achilles tear, and everybody constantly asked me, so what do you think Wall looks like when he comes back? My answer every single time was like, I have no idea. How am I possibly supposed to know that? I have no clue. I'm going to ask you though, what is there any sort of expectation? Yeah, I'll ask it a little differently because nobody really knows what he's going to look like, right? But is there any sort of expectation, reasonable expectation we should have for him? I know organizations always pump up those guys, you know, in relation to Wall. The Wizards were always just like, Wall is – he looks great. He looks amazing. He's going to be awesome. But what is the reasonable expectation for Clay once he returns?
Yeah, you know, I think they've somewhat tried to go the other way, and they still are. Like, hey, it's going to be 18 minutes to start. He's going to go through his struggles. He hasn't played in 2 years. You know, non-athletes don't understand how much that, you know, can affect the body and how long that takes to get in a rhythm. But you talk to people who've seen it, who are usually pretty genuine with their thoughts on and off the record. You know, I'm talking about Iguodala, Draymond Green, you know, Steve Kerr, and they have seen really good gradual growth over the last month. He's become more physical. The endurance is getting better. They talked early in the scrimmages, like he might hit a three or two to start it, but he gets tired. He either needs to come out or like the shots get short. He even talked about in Denver in the high altitude in the scrimmage, he missed his first few shots because he was like short of breath, but then, you know, got into a rhythm. I think in general though, like they're not able to hide very well how good they feel about what he looks like right now. He's going to shoot it. I mean, the shot is still there. He even said like he's never really been concerned about what the shot's going to be, and he's scoring it, and apparently he's getting better defensively. They have the number one defense in the league, yet they're starting a backcourt that is Steph Curry and Jordan Poole, which is pretty undersized, like offense first backcourt. I mean, you're going to plug Klay Thompson in for Poole, and the belief is that's going to be a defensive upgrade. I've even asked, like, is this version of Klay Thompson coming off an ACL, coming off Achilles, going to be a defensive upgrade? And they're like, yeah, I mean, because he takes defense very serious, and he's big and physical. And like, I do want to see the lateral quickness early on, but the physicality apparently is still there. You talk to people who played with him, like you're still feeling big guard Klay Thompson out there on the court. And look, he says it's going to take a few weeks to be his all-star form again. That's where I'm like, I don't know. Like, who knows if we'll ever see all-star form again, but this guy is about to, I pretty strongly believe be an obvious rotation upgrade for a team that already has the best record in the league. And that's what matters most.
You know, what's really interesting about that? You mentioned the defense, and like, remember at the very beginning of the year, we did our Western Conference preview and we had to pick our most overrated team in the Western Conference. And I so intelligently picked the Golden State Warriors, pick that just has aged. It's aged wonderfully.
It's okay because why? Because you said nice things about DeMar DeRozan.
That's true. Why, I was the only person on the internet who was okay with the DeRozan signing in Chicago. But something that we talked about that day was the thing that I wondered the most about was like, Clay's jumper will probably be okay, but he was such a great defender before the injury and Golden State relied on him so much. And they were very good defensively last year. And I was wondering if they were going to have to rely on him too much coming out of the injury defensively. The fact that Andrew Wiggins is such a good defender is so important for them. Like, Clay doesn't need to come in and just, all right, you go guard the best player right off the bat. Like, the Warriors have that. They've got Draymond in the middle of an incredible, like, he's probably defensive player of the year right now. And Wiggins has been, I mean, I'm sure you can back me up on this. He's been the best defender. He's been the best he's ever been defensively.
Yeah, for sure. They're actually trying to internally pump him up for the All-Star game, which I'm not ready to go there yet, but they are.
That's when you know it's time for Clay to come back.
Yeah. You also have you also have Gary Payton II, who's been like a defensive revelation, and just generally like what they're good at defensively isn't really as much about individual defense. It's about like what they do as a team, what they do is from a scheme perspective, the way Draymond Green can help. And I mean, they've got guys like Otto Porter and Nemanja Bjelica out there, who, like, and I'm talking about a stiff later in his career, Otto Porter, that are good defensive components because of they know where to be, and the Warriors know which personnel to give all the different stuff that goes into defense that is about the mind, not your
Slater
lateral quickness.
Called Otto Porter a stiff. Is that what you heard, Fred?
No, I said he's stiffer. Go watch his Washington Wizards highlights.
I'm being a smartass.
I know.
Let me throw this at you, brother, real quick change of pace, but also on the Clay front. And this is one of those things that only you can analyze. Can you please kind of educate the listeners about the one and only Rick Celebrini, because I find him to be an interesting character in this whole situation, unless it's changed. You know, the title I see in front of me is Director of Sports Medicine. The mainstream, or at least, you know, kind of non-Warriors basketball audience might remember Rick from being in the news for the wrong type of reasons back in the 2019 finals when Kevin Durant came back from, you know, that injury earlier in the playoffs, then got hurt again, obviously toward the Achilles. You know, that's not when you want to be in the news, but right now I think it seems, tell me if I'm wrong, that it's a testament to Rick and the trust that he still kind of inspires within their group, because you hear Clay consistently talk about how, you know, I feel like essentially I'm ready to go, but I got to get the green light from Rick. And he doesn't seem to be in his feelings all that much about it. Now, I'm sure he is, but it seems like, you know, he's putting a lot of trust in Rick. And so what is that dynamic, and what do you think specifically, you know, that somebody like Rick is waiting to see here before giving the final go ahead?
Yeah, I mean, so the context here, it was Chelsea Lane had this job for the Warriors for a while. When Travis Schlenk went to Atlanta, she went to Atlanta. They went and hired Rick Celebrini for a large part because Rick Celebrini was Steve Nash's guy in Phoenix. There was a feeling from Steve Kerr, who was the GM in Phoenix at the time and knows Rick well, that like Rick Celebrini helped extend Steve Nash's career into his late 30s. I mean, he is the title that Sam mentioned. I mean, he's kind of the head of all the medical decisions within the Warriors. Yeah, I mean, his first season here was when they had that disastrous playoffs, which, you know, concluded, obviously, Clay tore his Achilles on a freak accident. But then when they greenlit Durant to come back on the court after he had the calf thing, and obviously he has the Achilles tear. But then, well, I think what matters now in the situation we're talking about with Clay is Clay did his ACL rehab more away from the team than the Achilles rehab. And this was his first long rehab. And I do think there's a little bit of frustration within the Warriors about how little he was around, and maybe some bumping heads, which is natural for the first real long rehab of a person's career. And we're talking about Klay Thompson, who not only loves basketball, but is just like, he was an 82 game, 38 minute per night, just like workhorse. And suddenly he had it ripped away from him. And he just struggled during that year with the whole tedious nature of the rehab process and Rick Celebrini's, I guess, involvement within that and making sure Clay was always on his, you know, P's and Q's, whatever. And then at the end of the ACL rehab process, which, like I said, was done more away from the team, Clay is playing, I mean, we'll I guess call it unsupervised pickup basketball in Los Angeles, and tears his Achilles. And this Achilles rehab, which is just as tedious, maybe more than the ACL, Clay has been much more around the Warriors and I guess maybe you want to say listening to Celebrini more, but certainly like going through the tedious nature much more diligently and willingly. And that includes this last month where, like I said, physically he was ready to play unrestricted, you know, 5-on-5 scrimmage basketball, like early December, I think it was. And we're sitting here in January and they still haven't given him the green light. And while there has, I think, been some times where Clay's like, come on, I'm ready. Remember the moment where he's sitting on the bench, towel over his head. Marcus wrote the great story on it. Cause what he was dealing with mentally, like at that point, he physically could have gone out there and played that night. They just have been so patient in building up his endurance through Celebrini. And, you know, he gave the quote the other day, like he's waiting for Rick to give him the green light. And he is accepting of that, and I think a lot more maybe accepting of that than when he was coming back from the ACL.
No, that's great context. I mean, that kind of the dots you connected between the final stages of the first rehab versus this one does seem to inform it quite a bit. You kind of alluded to it a minute ago, man, that the fact that the Warriors are kind of, you know, signaling when he's going to come back, essentially telling the fans and the media that get ready for January 9th. You know, you're going to see that impact on the secondary market. Even honestly, guys like myself or reporters in my shoes where you don't have to be there every night, you start going, okay, I guess I'm going to make that drive and get a credential and be there to see Clay's return. That'll be super interesting.
You know what's crazy? Just from a local perspective, that is now going up against Niners, Rams. Niners have to win to get into the playoffs on Sunday. It's just going to be Bay Area.
Same time?
Like, yeah. Well, let me. The Niners game is not the night game. No, so I guess it's 1:25 local is the Niners game. 5:30, I think, it's the Warriors game.
Great. Gotcha. Spaced out perfectly.
Yeah, fans will probably love it, but if you have to choose one of the two, I know there's media members who are like, I'm going to be in L.A. for, like, I think Kawakami already said, like, I'm going to be in L.A. Right there. Yeah. Now, Marcus is going to be in Chase, I think.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, you had asked, before we get to Fred and all things DeRozan, my quick 2 cents on the Jamal Murray front. Michael Malone had told me in no uncertain terms that, you know, they're not putting, and he said this before, they're not putting pressure on Jamal to come back, you know, by a certain time. And then I even tried to push him and said, you know, are you at least sure that he's going to come back this season? And he said, no, not for sure. Now, I think two things can be true. Michael can be saying his truth and I believe him from an integrity standpoint, but I also think that when all is said and done, the way he framed it is going to be, you know, kind of proved to be incredibly conservative for obvious reasons. They want Jamal to know that to the outside world. Now, obviously, you know, he got hurt back in February. To the outside world, we are not sitting here kind of framing you as some, you know, kind of nugget savior where you got to get back in time for the playoffs. And then we're going to see what kind of damage we can do. I do think for sure there is a chance that we see Jamal, you know, call it late February, mid February. I don't know. He just put up a windmill dunk on IG.
February.
I think that was today.
That's ironically
next month.
Let me be more responsible here. And again, out of respect for Michael,
he's about to get aggregated.
You
know,
Sam, you said February 1st, right?
Yeah, exactly. No, but like Michael said, there was a report indicating February, and he said that he and Jamal sat around laughing at the report because it had a source with knowledge, and I honestly don't even remember the platform, but source with knowledge indicating that they knew Jamal's timeline and that's what they were looking at, and that they laughed at that report. I'm just saying that people who are around the team every day would 100% not be surprised to see him in plenty of time for the playoffs. And then when he goes ahead and puts, you know, once you put that windmill dunk on IG, I feel like all bets are off from a speculation standpoint. You know, that's the kind of stuff you start doing that you're kind of feeding the hype machine a little bit. And they have stayed afloat, won a couple games recently to crawl above 500. Obviously, Jokic has been phenomenal and is in the MVP discussion. And like the Clippers, who I mentioned, they're in the same kind of neighborhood standings-wise and waiting on Kawhi Leonard. It just potentially could get really, really interesting at the final stretch of the regular season.
Yeah, and the West is not that good once you get out of the top two.
No,
I mean
the top three.
I'm sorry, Utah as well. Once you get out of the top three, I mean, they could realistically, if Murray comes back with enough time, they could realistically claim the four seed. You know, 100%. Memphis would have to drop a little bit. They'd have to climb a little bit more. He would be so huge for them. Their bench units just get destroyed. And being able to put Morris back on the bench and just be able to run things very, very competently, he's an excellent backup point guard. Being able to put him back there, I think, would just change all the world for that team, on top of the fact that you're getting Jamal Murray, who is excellent and fun and incredible with Jokic. I think they're dangerous. Gordon's been good for them. If Murray comes back and is like 85% of Jamal Murray, that's a ridiculously dangerous team, even without Michael Porter Jr.
So I actually am a little bit more like skeptical of Denver this season, because obviously Porter, I mean, like, do we think we're going to see Michael Porter Jr. again this season?
No, I don't either.
And when Denver made their bubble run, to the West Finals and really gave the Lakers a pretty good West Finals, Jamal Murray was like incredible. He was like top 10 level type NBA player. Now that's only been in the bubble. I mean, otherwise he's been a level down of a star, fringe star, whatever you want to call him. But in the bubble, when they have shown to be their most threatening as a title contender, Jamal Murray was like 38 minutes at night, like, you know, scoring 50 balls against Utah. He was killing the Lakers even in some of those games. And while sure, maybe, I mean, like, that does sound like there's a lot of Jamal Murray optimism, and maybe he gets a month ramp up to the playoffs, and maybe he's some form of himself. To me, for them to be a legitimate threat in the West, he has to be awesome. And I mean, like, you know, 35 minutes every night, high usage. Yeah, he's making the Nuggets survive when Jokic isn't on the court. But even when Jokic is on the court, they're just running pick and roll after pick and roll. He's got to play good defensively. Like, I just, maybe that's next season. A lot of people say with these injuries, these year-long injuries, that it's usually the second season. I can't imagine, like, the durable, explosive top 10 type Jamal Murray playoffs coming a month after he returns from an ACL.
So I'm admittedly being a little, it's not devil's advocate, but for the sake of, I guess, debate, you know, there's nuance here, right? But like, it is funny to see you know, you're breaking down Clay situations later and you're talking a 2-year absence and you're talking immediate impact and all-star caliber play within 3-4 weeks.
That's what he said. I do not think that.
Right. So I just wonder where's the difference? Obviously, their styles of play are very, very different.
So I would say Klay Thompson needs to be like a sharpshooter and like a defensive component. He needs to be a role player, a good, you know, good role player for the Warriors, right? Because we're just seeing what the Warriors are without Klay Thompson. They need him to come back and be a championship piece. I think Denver would, to become a title contender, would need Jamal Murray to come back and be like a 1B to Jokic. I don't think Klay Thompson is going to come back. Like, if you just switch teams right now and said Jamal Murray was coming back to the Warriors and Klay Thompson was coming back to the Nuggets, I'd have the same thoughts. Murray's probably capable of coming in, really helping the Warriors rotationally. Klay Thompson, I would not think would go and be like a 1B to Jokic's 1A, and suddenly they're a title contender. I just think the situations are different. For like, there's just way more of a burden on what Murray has to do to raise Denver's ceiling than what the Warriors need Klay Thompson to just like help them get better from a team that's already, you know, tops in the league right now.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair point. I mean, also, like, I don't think we're talking about Denver as taking over Phoenix or Utah or Golden State, especially. Like, I think it's more, they can claim a top four, they can win maybe a playoff series, and that's about it. Like, I don't think they have enough really good players, because don't forget, like, PJ Dozier got hurt. Yep. Like, I don't think they have enough really good players on that roster to be able to beat like Utah in a second round playoff series, even if Murray is back and playing really, really well. But they could be really good. I mean, they could be really good, yeah, and they could win a playoff series.
You guys remember Paul George when he broke his leg? Different injury, obviously. But remember, he came back to the Pacers and, like, I think he played in the last, like, 8 games of that season. And then I think, mm-hmm, did they make the first round? I can't remember. But he just got some time in to get him. And then the next season, he was an all-star again. And it was like, ooh, you know, Paul George is back. To me, if I'm Denver, like, everything should be built towards next season. And that includes wanting to get Jamal Murray back in rhythm and get feeling good about the knee, and maybe you win a first round series. But especially with the Michael Porter situation, who's like, we all know how vitally important he is. Like, that needs to get solved. To me, I'm just like, every decision that I would be making from a Denver perspective would be like, how does this make sense for next season's run?
Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, and show you hidden allies so that you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/NBAshow23. That's linkedin.com/NBAshow23 for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/NBA Show 23 and get started.
All right, gentlemen, we have waited long enough. Fred.
Too long, Sam. Too long.
I feel like I should go WWE style in this corner. Fred Katz, maybe coming
kick
strong.
It, maybe kick it to a commercial read to release at this stage.
Yes, we need to find a way to build the suspense. So, Slater, have you ever been this excited for a Fred Katz rant perspective? Is it a rant? Is it a soliloquy? Is it a, you know, what is
it's
this,
a, it's a, you know, Jerry Seinfeld has a thing where he doesn't want anybody to ever say before he goes on, he doesn't want anybody to ever introduce him as the greatest stand-up comic because he can only let down after that. So
so thanks for joining Tampering today, folks. We're all done.
I really appreciate this. This is unquestionably going to be the biggest letdown ever. We go over the topics that we want to talk about, and I pushed hard to talk about DeMar DeRozan. I think he's a worthwhile topic, and my take is...
Hold on, let me frame it if you don't mind, real quick. Sure. So I was reluctant to talk Bulls only because we just had the great Darnell Mayberry on a few weeks ago in one of the weeks when you couldn't join us, Fred. And not that we can't, I mean, we talk Warriors every week unofficially, so you know that shouldn't have been too big of a deal. But I pushed back a little bit, like we've had a lot of Bulls, you know, recently. But then you kept pushing on DeRozan, and I was buying it, I was into it. Then I did hear the Basketball Buds on yesterday's Athletic NBA show talking about it and a pretty robust discussion relating to the MVP talks. So I'll just give the people the quick basics as far as DeMar goes and then let you dive right in. Obviously, like we said, top of the East, 24-10. They have a game against Orlando tonight, so that's going to probably go to 25-10. They're fifth in offense, 12th in defensive rating, 7th in net rating overall. DeMar, though, and this is where you know, I think he is being overlooked, almost 27 points a game. You can get into some of the shooting splits, Fred, that are pretty interesting, but 4.6 assists, 5.1 rebounds, and a plus minus and a net rating stuff that is wild that I don't want to spoil everything. So that's kind of the little bit of the framing, but how do you see his status as the best story of the season, which is what I think you called him?
Yeah. I mean, he got destroyed. Or I should say the Bulls got destroyed for that signing. And if you guys remember, we did a little offseason thing, and I tried to speak DeMar DeRozan into the Bulls into existence. I think at the time, I wanted it to be a DeRozan for Lauri Markkanen double sign-in trade. And the deal ended up turning out a little different, and they got killed for giving up a first-round pick for him. And clearly, the Bulls were correct. And DeRozan...
And by proxy, you. Yes.
Well, DeRozan is just, he's had such a fascinating career because if you look at, I mean, you mentioned the plus minus stuff, which to me is the most interesting part of all of it, where, you know, leading up to this year, he had only been on one team that was better while he was on the floor. Like, dude's been in the league for, this is his 13th season. And up to this season, his first 12 seasons, only the 2012 Raptors were better when he was on the floor. Every other team that he has played on, like that 59-win Raptors team, the 16 team that went to the conference finals, the Spurs teams, every other team that he has played on has been worse when he's been on the floor. And after 12 years, you just kind of say, like, all right, well, there is a common denominator here, and it's DeMar DeRozan. And then this year, the Bulls are 17 points per 100 possessions better when DeMar DeRozan is playing. It's this unbelievably stark contrast. And you know, kind of the number one criticism in the analytics community of DeRozan, beyond the fact that he's not a voluminous three-point shooter, is the fact that his teams are constantly worse when he's playing. And that just could not be more untrue this year. I mean, 17 points per 100 is a massive, massive difference. I think he's a great basketball fit there. Dude, you left out, Sam, that by the time people listen to this, they will have played the Magic on Monday night. But the dude just hit buzzer beater game winners in back-to-back games and is the first top player in NBA history to do that.
Naturally, three-pointers.
And is the first player since 1985 to hit back-to-back game winners. The last guy to do that was 1985.
Larry Legend.
Exactly. 36 yep. years ago, Larry Bird did it. I mean...
And not just game winners. We got to... It's been talked about a lot, but we got to give our kind of flowers to the style of game winners that DeMar went with. A right knee up, like honestly, like Sam Amick pickup basketball style, you know,
is Sam Amick
probably catch a guy in the groin with his knee.
Is Sam Amick about to compare his jumper to DeMar DeRozan's smooth one legged?
Because it looks like a horse shot. Like for me, it would look like an unintentional.
Would you have made the shot, Sam?
No.
Would you have reached the rim? That was like
happy to draw a rim. Yes. He nails his three that if you didn't know any better, you think, you know, he just got confused on the play. I mean, the style selection shot wise was wild. Hits that three, going to the right side, top of the key, wins that game. And then, you know, who they play in the next one, Fred?
Washington.
The Wizards. Yeah, your old team. You know, I mean, left corner. And, you know, we all know that he is just the absolute master of the pump fake. You know, that's been part of the repertoire for a long time. But I think it was a double pump and, you know, jumping in between two defenders and just falling out of bounds and finding the net on that one. I mean, two incredible game winners.
Yeah, speaking of the pump fake, you know what's another interesting DeMar thing? We spent this whole season talking about the new foul rules and how it's affected all of these foul drawing perimeter players, right? Like how it's affected Trae Young. Trae Young's having a great season. His fouls drawn on shooting fouls are way down. How it's affected James Harden, how it's affected Bradley Beal, all of these like foul drawing perimeter players who are like that. And DeMar DeRozan's free throw attempt rate is exactly at his career average right now. I mean, the guy is getting to the line eight times a game still. That pump fake is like his fouls are real fouls. He was not goading guys into fouls.
Right.
His game is just real so fouls. Refined at this point.
This is real foul.
It's real man's foul.
So you want to know what I find interesting about this, like DeRozan season. Players love DeMar DeRozan, always have. Love his game. I remember Kevin Durant back in the day being like, he's got the best footwork. And, you know, Kevin Durant, who's like a mid-range maven, obviously, like, loves the way DeMar DeRozan gets to his 17-footer and all that. And there, like, I feel like there was always pushback for years of, like, you guys don't know how good DeMar DeRozan is. And the fact that there was such criticism on the contract this summer and then what he has done, I think has, like, you see a lot of online like commentary from players like, ha, you analytics guys, whatever, are wrong. Draymond Green was like tweeting out like screenshots of like Bleacher Report and different rankings of DeMar DeRozan being labeled the, you know, worst contract of the summer, and be like, you know, I'm not hearing y'all now, basically. And I just this feels like the players believe it's a win for the players.
You know who else it's open for? Greg Popovich. Because when DeMar went to San Antonio, and nobody outside of San Antonio really noticed, and if I'm being real, even national guys like myself, you know, largely ignored his entire Spurs tenure. 3 years under Greg Popovich, and what you will now hear him talk about is the idea that he evolved in a pretty significant way. And, you know, this is something I've talked to his people about, his agent, Aaron Goodwin. Zach Lowe wrote about it this week for ESPN, and I thought it was good stuff. As a playmaker, he evolved. As a guy who, you know, who wasn't just out there getting his 20 a game and doing a whole lot more, he evolved. He had already done that in Toronto, but when you had Kyle Lowry running the show on the point, you could only do it to such a degree. You see it all come into fruition now with Chicago. What I find fascinating, because Fred, you broke down, you know, the net rating stuff and all those years where they were better with him off the floor. All of a sudden, ironically, Zach LaVine is the one kind of living that life. And I almost feel bad for him because it's so hard to analyze this stuff and pull out the real meaning. You know, Zach is sitting here with basically the same, you know, stat line, other than the obvious discrepancy in the way they shoot the three ball. But the Bulls have been better with Zach off the floor. He's checking that box that DeMar did for a long time, which I find pretty wild.
Yeah, very. I mean, that being said, a lot of the Bulls' best lineups still have Zach LaVine. So there are some bad lineups that are just really bringing that down.
Yeah, plus 2.3 with him on. And
but like you look at, you know, DeRozan, Vooch, LaVine, and Ball together, very good net rating. DeRozan, Vooch, LaVine, and Green, same thing.
No, that's
DeRozan,
all fair.
LaVine, Caruso, Ball, all really good.
You probably
could
have gone through DeMar's career and pulled, you know, and made that same argument, right? That there were.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. I mean, the thing is, 1 year net rating is like, it's not an end-all be-all. It's just, it's not. It's just that when it happens for a dozen years, now all of a sudden, that kind of stuff catches up to you. And look, I mean, part of the stuff with the Spurs had great benches. Like Patty Mills was leading ridiculous bench units for the Spurs every year, which were just killing opposing reserves, which is part of why all of their starters had really bad on off numbers all of those years.
Even Pirtle?
Jakob. Actually, I think Pirtle was the one starter with the really good on offs because he played with the bench sometimes. I think he would have been
the
one.
That's the rant I want you going on. That's next week. Can we get a Jakob Pirtle rant next
Jakob
week?
Jakob Pirtle is having a good year.
Sounds like a segment next week.
Pesky Spurs are climbing the Western Conference
and
standings.
And nobody's
right now
discussing it until Fred Katz next week.
Damn straight. Someone's got to get on
the
Spurs.
Well, we've locked it in, Sam. That's his segment next week.
We have. Let me finish the DeRozan segment here, guys. And then I got a quick Stanley Johnson story to share on the back end. It's Lakers. You know, since he's in the news with the Lakers, it's good timing. With DeMar, just to kind of pound the point home about his clutchness, he's tied with Giannis Antetokounmpo in fourth quarter scoring, 8 points per fourth. Got a true shooting in fourth quarters of 62.7, which is a few figures up from his, per game total. So really good stuff there. What are your guys' quick thoughts on, I know it's kind of cliche, we go to it a lot, but the MVP race and what the Basketball Buds guys got into about, okay, fine, all this praise for DeMar, where does he fit in this kind of, Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Nikola Jokic MVP race? Where does DeMar fall? Can't even talk.
Fifth of those five.
Yeah. Yeah. Fifth or first one off the ballot, probably for me. I mean,
you're bumping on the AMIC rankings. I had Rudy Gobert fifth. You're bumping Mr. Gobert out of my fifth
Gobert
spot.
Gobert is a totally good pick. Gobert's been great. He's a totally good pick. I have no problem with that. Chris Paul, totally fine pick too. Fine with that.
How about all NBA first team DeMar DeRozan? That is like, because that's where, because if you're saying Jokic. I mean,
based on the breakdown, that's where he would be.
Yeah. Which,
I mean, he's definitely all NBA.
I don't think he's going to win MVP. I don't think he's going to win MVP, but man, an all NBA first team, which by the way, he'll probably have to hold off LeBron, who's having quite a season.
Yes.
Yeah, which he probably won't, I would say, although who knows if the Lakers record stays where it is. But the fact that we're having this conversation, that's a lot of growth from DeMar DeRozan to be in that All-NBA first team.
I wonder if they're going to give him dual eligibility. Like, I wonder if he'll be eligible at guard and forward because they're very, very loose. Yeah, they're very liberal with giving out guard and forward now, and I wonder if he'll get that. Because it's possible. They just kind of give it to anybody who could potentially get it.
I mean, if I pull the old, if the season ended today card, then for sure he's first team All NBA.
He's also, Sam, just to add to the clutch stuff, in clutch time, which is a game that is within 5 points with five or fewer minutes to go, DeMar DeRozan is averaging 42 points per 36 minutes right now, which is second best in the NBA in clutch time behind Joel Embiid. Just tremendous, tremendous numbers.
Tremendous, yeah.
Great wrap on that segment, Fred.
Way to put a finer point on it. I like it. All right, so I'm sitting in the bubble one day, guys. And as you've heard me say before, it was an extremely unique experience that I will always mostly cherish with a few tough memories along the way. But as unique a reporting experience as I will ever have. And probably about midway through the bubble, life. I'm sitting next to, try to paint the picture for you here. There's all these hotels on the perimeter of the bubble, obviously the Disney property, it's the Coronado Resort. And there's a lake where we used to always kind of sit next to with our laptops, and maybe have a glass of wine and write our stories and hang out. Well, I'm there late one night by myself, getting some writing done post game. And at the time, no other writers, just me. And I look across, a couple tables and I see Stanley Johnson. He's sitting there with a young lady just talking, late at night. And he could not have been nicer. I didn't know Stanley at all. He looks up as I'm sitting there doing my thing. And on the back of my laptop, I have the old company sticker. It says The Athletic on the back of the laptop. Stanley sees the sticker and strikes up a conversation that was just one of the best conversations I've ever had with a player about the media industry. He ends up sharing, he says hello, basically says, hey, you know, I love what you guys do. And we get into this whole talk about the relationship between reporters and players. And he could not have been more respectful of what we do. He sat there, he even said things, and I think this is all fair game to share. It's, you know, it's all positive stuff. You know, he even said things like, hey, listen, I know some of the bigger name guys, you know, might act like y'all are an annoyance, but like, you got to trust that like the players appreciate what you guys do, telling our stories, trying to help the fans understand what we do, you know, things of that nature. So cool conversation, maybe 15 minutes or so, something like that. And, you know, say, have a good night and we're on our way. The part where, you know, a good story makes me look pretty damn bad, but I'm just going to own it, is the bubble is now, you know, in the later stretches of the bubble, and the Celtics have just beaten the Raptors in the playoffs. At the time, Stanley's on the Raptors, but he's not playing much. And I see, this is after the game is over, I'm back in the same exact spot, doing the same exact thing, writing my story. You know, there's a more of a crowd, players are coming by. Bottom line, I see Stanley walk by, and I'm just trying to be friendly and say hello since we'd become, you know, fast friends the other day, and have the worst kind of brain fart when, because he hadn't been playing, I drew a blank on what damn team he was on at the time, and I said, congrats. And my stomach dropped immediately, and it was just, oh, Lord. And he shot me this look like, what, bro? Like, and I don't even think I tried to save it. So bad moment for Sam. But, you know, suffice it to say, Stanley seemed like good people, and I've heard nothing but good things about him. As far as the Lakers go, 5 good games on this 10-day contract, this, you know, hardship contract that where they added him. And Frank Vogel, in real time, as we've been sitting here doing the pod, has just publicly said that Stanley Johnson has become a factor for them. You know, he's played big minutes, you know, helped them on the defensive end, you know, fitting in fairly well. They trade Rajon Rondo to Cleveland, and that deal that involved your Knicks, Fred, to, you know, mainly to clear the roster spot, seemingly to hold on to Stanley for the rest of the year. So it seems like that's going to get done. So, you know, just kudos to him for, you know, grinding and finding another spot here. It seems like
once a really high pick that was thought to have a lot, 8th overall actually to Detroit, that was thought to have a really bright future, fizzled out. But, you know, sometimes those guys come back around, they figure out their role, their games mature, and they find their way in.
He's always had defensive potential.
At least this time I can say congrats and get it right. I'm going to say congrats on your Lakers, you know, contract.
Oh, we know if he's a Laker, we know Sam Amick's going to know that at least. You know, this big city, California, only cares about the if big he's, names.
Yeah, who's playing for that?
If he's
Toronto
a Spur,
team?
I can remind you that he's playing with Jakob Poeltl.
All right, guys, I'm going to let you go with that. I appreciate you. Fred, it was good to see you again. Thank you for your DeRozan breakdown. You lived up to it, man. That was good stuff. I liked it.
Tried hard.
Slater, next time I see you, I'm going to probably see you on Sunday night when the one and only Klay Thompson is reportedly coming back. Thank you to Jade Hoy, who we haven't seen in a minute. Jade, this is Andrew Schleck territory, so it was very nice of you to help us out. Appreciate you, brother. Of course. All right, guys. Have a good one.
So we drove up to this gas station. Brian and Tooth is home. The man come out. Brian said, fill him up. He looked. I don't sell no black gas.
He didn't even have no black water. The only thing he had dark was Cokes, and he didn't sell them to us.
That's right.
Let's get out of this town. It don't make sense. So
Brian starts up the car, we back on the road again.
On the road again.
On the road again.
Save your tears for me, mama.
Thank you, tell for me, mama.
Please don't cry no more.
Please don't cry no more.
Oh, Brian, you know, man, when we was living in Harlem, that New York, man, 1944 and 48 long there. We used to drink all that liquor. We used to buy a pint, you know, and I'd drink half, you drink half. You told me, said, son, let me get mine in Frisco. You don't see what you're drinking. Then we'll get drunk then, coming down the street, staggering along. He said, well, Sonny, said, man, you walk for me and I'll see for you.
But, you know, when I first met you, Sonny, I didn't think that you had a...